start with a little historical perspective. The first and only use of nuclear weapons in war was in 1945, when the Americans dropped a 12.5 kiloton nuclear bomb on Hiroshima, which was deliberately chosen so that the Americans could assess the impact of the bomb because it was one of the targets that had never been hit before in the course of the war. And 2 days later, they dropped a bomb on Nagasaki. They did that so that they could try out the hydrogen bomb, and they wanted to know what the impact of that would be. And they didn't hit their original target, which was a military one, because the target was obscured by fog at the time. In Hiroshima, an area of 13 square kilometres was reduced to ashes. 63% of all buildings were destroyed. 140,000 people died. And the survivors continued to die afterwards from the long-term effects of radiation sickness and genetic and chromosome abnormalities affecting even unborn children. As of August 2014, the number of people who are recognised as having died from the effects of those two atomic bombs stood at 450,000. Okay. And did it hasten the end of the Second World War, which is what people claim? Well, actually, it didn't, because at the time of those attacks, the Japanese were already negotiating a surrender. So that knocks that argument on the head. Today, there are approximately 16,000 nuclear weapons in the world, with hundreds of times the explosive power of the weapons used in 1945. The explosive power of the nuclear weapons on one Trident submarine is 320 times the power of the Hiroshima bomb. Russia and the Americans now have approximately 15,000 nuclear warheads between them. If a bomb of the sort currently deployed by the US or Russia were dropped on London, 690,000 people would be killed by the blast, never mind the long-term effects of the fallout. And if one of the size of the largest Russian missiles that have been tested, nearly 6 million people would be killed, the blast radius stretching from Reading to Southend. That's just the blast. There's a lengthy document there about what happens if you drop it on Moscow. Even a regional conflict, say between two nuclear-armed states like India and Pakistan, would probably involve about 100 warheads the size of those dropped on Japan. Computer modelling shows that 100 bombs in conflict would send up 5 megatons of black carbon into the atmosphere, blocking out the sun and reducing the temperature on Earth by up to 2 degrees Fahrenheit in just 1 year. This would have a devastating effect on rainfall, and within 2 to 6 years, the growing season for crops would be slashed worldwide and the ozone layer thinned by 25%, increasing the risk of cancers in the human population. But don't worry, because nobody's ever going to use these weapons, are they? And they've kept us safe so far. Okay? So I think perhaps we should just have a look at the concept of mutually assured destruction, which underlies the theory of deterrence. It was developed after the 1945 conflict in a bipolar world where we had communist Russia against the West. Simple. And essentially, it's a game of call my bluff, depending on the other side believing that if they launch a nuclear attack, we have the capacity to reply with equal devastation. It's quite instructive here, and I won't go into all the details, to think about what happened in 1962, which is the time when the world came closest to the nuclear apocalypse. A detailed examination by the investigative journalist Eric Schlosser shows how a catalogue of misinformation and miscalculation and poor communication at a time of heightened tension in the Cold War, which was the Berlin crisis, took us to the brink. At the last moment, both Kennedy and Khrushchev backed down, but it was touch and go, and we were actually within 24 hours of an all-out nuclear war. And then we wouldn't be discussing this now. I don't know how many people will have ever seen the 1964 film Dr. Strangelove. That is a very astute parody of the theories of the analysts at the time of the Kennedy administration and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It features a magnificent shot of Peter Sellers aboard a missile yelling Yahoo as it goes through the air to meet the doomsday bomb on the other side. Okay. Now, the world's changed since the 1960s. The major power blocks are different, and particularly a major power block now on the Asia-Pacific Rim. So the nature of the state has changed as well. It's been disrupted by continuous wars in the Middle East. And the major threat to our national security is actually from terrorism and terrorism and from asymmetric warfare, as they now call it. So how good's Trident at dealing with this? Nuclear weapons have no military value against terrorists. No sane politician can ever use them, as the resulting loss of innocent civilian lives would be greater than from all terrorist attacks combined. David Cameron announced at the outcome, as he was talking about the outcome of the 2015 Security and Strategic Defence Review, so he's bringing this completely up to date. Lord Brown, who had been Defence Secretary between 2006 and 2008, highlighted a report by the Defence Science Board of the US Defence Department, which warned that the US and its allies cannot be confident that their defence systems would be able to survive an attack from a sophisticated and well-resourced opponent utilising cyber capabilities in combination with their military intelligence. He went on to say, the government have an obligation to assume to assure Parliament that all of the systems of the nuclear deterrent have been assessed against end-to-end cyber attacks. In fact, Britain's Trident nuclear weapons system may well turn out to be obsolete, as the 3.2 billion, which has been allocated to cyber security, is nowhere near the scale of meeting the cyber threat. It just won't come anywhere near providing you protection. Schlosser also goes on in his book, which is a magnificent book. It's a volume like that. It's incredibly well researched. It's a very easy read. It's just it's bloody heavy. He tells the tale of more than 50 years of near catastrophes caused by accidents, mistakes, carelessness, misunderstanding. In 2003, half of the Air Force units responsible for nuclear weapons failed their safety inspections. And in case you think it's any better over here, the revelations of the Trident whistleblower William McNeely earlier this year details a catalogue of failings in the operation and maintenance of the UK submarines, including equipment failure, lapse in safety and security procedures, and with key posts filled by unqualified staff. He said, it's only a matter of time before one of our Trident submarines is lost. Global nuclear war can also be started by mistake. There's another useful little incident. In January 1995, Russian military officials mistook a Norwegian weather rocket for a US submarine-launched ballistic missile. Yeltsin, in fact, he had the nuclear bit out in front of him. He had a few minutes to decide if he would push the metaphorical button to launch a barrage of missiles. He fortunately thought he would check out the information he was receiving, and he didn't press the button. Thank you, lucky stars. Now, the military, a lot of minds in the military, and I would say of the currently involved military, hold the view that the money devoted to our nuclear weapons is at the cost of sustaining a basic military capability, and that may very well come and hit us back over Syria, because we may not have the manpower and the weapons that we say we have, and they may not be operative. According to the government's new Strategic Defence and Security Review, the costs of building four new submarines for the UK's Trident nuclear weapons has risen by at least £31 billion, a rise of 20% over 1 year, just the past year, with the submarine not scheduled to enter service until the early 2030s. In addition, the government has set aside a contingency of £10 billion for the successor project, indicating that they feel there's a considerable risk of cost escalation beyond the current estimates. The cost of the design stage, which is already underway, has now reached £3.9 million. Oh, I'm sorry to keep giving loads of figures, and they're sort of astronomically large. Over its lifetime, the cost of Trident will now exceed £167 billion, money that we would think should be spent on health and welfare services, not to mention on meeting the other major existential threat to our planet, which is that of climate change. There is also, as somebody mentioned jobs, there is also a movement among certain elements of the trade unions to say, well, the highly skilled jobs that we have in the nuclear industry are absolutely vital to our economy. However, there is a study, I'm not sure that I've managed to bring it with me, which shows that the civilian spin-offs are in fact the other way round from the way that is conventionally argued, because the spin-offs from a nuclear power investment are actually sustaining the technical capability for the nuclear weapons, and we are going to be subsidising our nuclear power to almost 100 times the cost per year per customer of the energy that you get from that. So it's very uneconomic. And what's more, there is a actually written by this man a document about how you would now diversify the skills that are currently occupied in the military aspects of nuclear war into other aspects, and actually up the road at Rolls-Royce, where they build the motive power for the nuclear submarines, that Rolls-Royce section, which is in trouble anyhow, have actually ditched their marine power section. Instead, they are concentrating on other rather less constructive ideas. And then I want to sort of just finish this quick one round by mentioning the legal and moral case against Trident. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was signed in 1970, and it was an attempt to halt the spread of nuclear weapons. Everybody was getting a bit worried by then about what could happen. Non-nuclear weapon states agreed not to acquire them, and the existing nuclear weapon states, that's the US, Russia, Britain, France and China, agreed they would enter serious negotiations to get rid of theirs. The non-nuclear states who signed up complied with that. The nuclear states did not. In the meantime, a number of states who hadn't signed it, that's India, Pakistan, Israel, and North Korea, now do have nuclear weapons. We don't know how many Israel has, actually, but, you know. The renewal, which is what we're being asked to back, what Parliament has what the government has decided, of the Trident nuclear weapon system is in direct breach of our obligations under that treaty. And then there's the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which demands the cessation of the development and improvement of nuclear weapons. Well, the work currently going on at the Atomic Weapons Establishment in Aldermaston is also in breach of the spirit, if not the letter, of that treaty. And I have to say that Aldermaston is also another of those places which has failed its health and safety regulations repeatedly. So, nuclear weapons are designed to cause extreme destruction, and they are indiscriminate in nature. Their use would be likely to meet the definition of a war crime or a crime against humanity. Under international laws governing the conduct of war, attacks on civilians are unlawful. The International Court of Justice ruled in 1996 that the threat or use of nuclear weapons, note the threat or use of nuclear weapons, would be contrary to the rules of international law. States must never use weapons. This may be something of some relevance in Syria as well. States must never use weapons that are incapable of distinguishing between civilians and military personnel. Yeah, hollow laugh. Right, so I think that that summarises as we say we want nuclear weapons. Why shouldn't, for our defence, why shouldn't every state on Earth have nuclear weapons for their defence? Are they not all entitled to be defended? Nuclear weapons are not a deterrent, and they should never be described as such. They don't give us security, even admitted by the military. Nuclear deterrence does not apply to terrorists when they're not state-sponsored, and nuclear weapons would not effectively deter them. The biggest threat to our security, as defined by our own government, are terrorists and cyber warfare. Trident is useless for these. The UK's four Tridents were useless in preventing the attack at King's Cross. The US 13 Trident nuclear-armed submarines were useless in the 9/11 attacks on New York. They're not independent, as is often claimed in this country. Trident is dependent on the US. The missiles are lease purchased from the USA, and the crews have to go across the Atlantic to train. The warheads that are manufactured in Burfield are, if they're independent, that's a bit questionable as well. Four Trident submarines, we may remember, are at the Faslane base in Scotland, which may very well be deciding it's going to become independent anyhow. And Faslane is now the forward base in Europe for the Americans. In conclusion, I'd just like to say that there are actually alternatives. We don't have to keep on behaving like this. What sort of alternatives? Well, my view is that the alternative is that you negotiate the peaceful resolution of conflict. I have always felt this. That involves listening to other people and probably other people that we fundamentally disagree with and whose values we deeply disapprove of. It means listening to them with imagination and understanding of their position, and then using patience, tolerance and compassion in negotiating compromises. And it also means being pretty careful with the language you use. And that takes me to the view that I hold, that it is not helpful in these circumstances to have the emotional rhetoric, however heartfelt, that was delivered by Hilary Benn last night.
Thank you, Leslie.